And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus on this finally Friday, the last Friday in September as we start October next month. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki along with our Ag Director Bridget Riedel. And Bridget, it sure does not feel like end of September out there. And we've got some unbelievable weather heading our way over the next, we've had about a week of great weather, and we're going to have about another 5 days of just absolutely beautiful, almost early summer-like weather out there.
Well, we'll take it while we can, because let's be honest, we know that this is a gift. Fall normally doesn't give us this much great weather, but we're going to take it. That means that for folks who are harvesting, where they're not getting stuck, hopefully not. I have seen some things from the Devil's Lake region where there are some residual problems left over from that heavy rainfall they had a couple weeks ago. But I know there's a lot of crop that's starting to dry down, and we'll be on the move before too terribly long.
And I think Addison, what you got your hand raised like you're in fifth grade. Go ahead, Addison.
Where's snow? Where cold?
You want both?
Yes.
We'll have plenty of that for this upcoming winter.
This does bring a smile to my face.
Let's not rush it, buddy.
Please?
No, man. No. In fact, we've got some really nice weather heading our way. Like I said, over the next 5 days or so, starting with today, the rest of today looking good. We're in the 70s right now. We'll make it up to about the upper 70s. Some spots could be lucky and touch 80 with the breezy conditions out of the south, southeast, 10 to 25. Down into the mid to upper 40s tonight, lighter winds, clear skies, good sleeping weather. If you don't have allergies, keep those windows open. And we've got homecoming tomorrow. And boy, you couldn't ask for much better weather. West winds about 5 to 15. Temperatures in the afternoon, it'll be a little chilly for tailgating, but not that bad. We'll be in the 50s during tailgating, warming up into the 70s. It looks like low to mid 70s tomorrow, so a little bit cooler. And then Sunday, those winds ramp up out of the south, 10 to 25 and gusty with highs around 80. Near record warmth on Monday, with highs in the mid to upper 80s. The record for Monday is 88, and that was just last year. I don't remember it being this warm last year, but obviously it was. We set a record high last year on Monday, so we'll be flirting with that. It will be breezy Monday and Tuesday as well. And temperatures remain right around the lower 80s all the way through the middle of next week. We do stand a chance for showers and storms towards Wednesday night and Thursday of next week. And Bridget, I don't see a change in this pattern until about October 10th, right around that time frame. We're starting to see signs that we're going to see a trough or an area of low pressure digging in to the Rocky Mountain region. Anytime that happens, that sends up alarm bells that now we're going to start seeing pattern change and could drag down some much cooler weather as we head towards after the 10th of October. And this weather is brought to you by Progressive Ag Risk Management Specialists. So let's enjoy the nice weather while it's here. And again, Bridget, we've got about another week to 10 days of above normal temperatures. So I don't hear anybody.
Right,
yeah,
boo.
Nobody complaining except Addison.
Boo.
Man.
So what you're saying is somewhere around October 10th, those who are in the northern parts of the border states of the U.S. as well as west of the Rocky Mountains are probably going to start to see some action that'll start moving our way before too terribly long.
Yeah. In fact, around the 10th, I do see snow in the Rockies, which is not unheard of. They just got about 8 to 10 inches in northern Colorado. But that might spread out into some of the lower elevations of the northern plains, let's say Montana, Wyoming, not out of the question. And eventually that will drag down some much cooler air after the 10th into our area as well. So, hey, I mean, if we can make it through the 10th of October with some decent weather around here, that's going to our farmers will be happy. That's for sure. And everybody except Addison, again, will be happy with the forecast.
What about me being happy, Dean?
You know, Addison, I'd say the majority of us are happy with the weather we got out there right now.
People might think I'm crazy. I would like to.
No, they don't have to.
I'd like to give a little bit of context. I drive a car that does not have a functioning AC.
That's what windows are for, buddy. That's what windows are for.
If you're driving 60 miles an hour, then you're just having 90-degree heat whack you in the face.
Listen, you look like Fabio with that long hair. Just let it blow out the window.
It doesn't go as well as you think it would. It doesn't work like how you think it would. It just whips into your eyes.
I would like to attest to that. Yeah. Yeah. That flow doesn't actually do flow.
My car's heater works fine, but the AC does not. So I'll take cold.
Open windows and convertibles are a challenge for Addison and myself.
Okay. Well, see, Addison, you have to wear your hair up like Bridget does. That'd look good in a bun. You could get that big man bun going.
Sounds like work. Then I can't put my headphones on.
Good point.
See? Now this is a work hazard. See? Okay. I have something, though, because we are seeing more folks getting into the field. A friend of mine through social media, her name is Mary Pat Sass. She and her husband farm down in the Nebraska area. She took a little bit of fun with 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. And here we go. 'Twas the night before harvest when all through the house, the farmer was stirring, disrupting his spouse. His stockings on his feet, a very lucky pair, in hopes that the combine would not need repair. The equipment was nestled all snug in the shed, for soon they would attach the combines to the heads. Morning will come, and as harvest begins, grain will flow from the combine to the grain cart, then the truck to the bins. The farmer lays awake in strong anticipation, wondering how each field will perform, a great fixation. For each harvest determines performance for the year. He's worried post-harvest he won't be in the clear. His legacy is on the line, a bit mind-boggling. It's his way of life, his passion, his livelihood, his true calling. His kids are still young, but someday he hopes to pass this farm on and show them the ropes. He knows God is in control. His worries are a bother. At the end of the day, it's up to the Father. So the farmer turns over, wrestling with the sheets, while his wife lays awake, praying he just go to sleep. She knows it's her time to be strong for them both. Harvest can be stressful. It's really no joke. But somehow, every year, they will make it all through and become stronger together with their faith in clear view. There we go. A little thought for the farmers as we are on Harvest Eve for some of you. Some of you are already in the throes of it. So be safe. Good luck. Hope everything goes well.
That's pretty good. She should copyright that. That's awesome.
She did.
Did she? Okay. Okay. That is pretty good. I like that.
Yeah, she did a really nice job of sharing that and helping folks just have a little bit of fun with what's going on in the farming world today. For those of you who are listening, don't be afraid to give us a call today on the JLA Insurance phone line. That is 701-293-9000. You can watch us actively on Facebook, YouTube, or Acres TV, where we are shown live every day while we're on air. And we want to make sure to remind you, farming, it's dirty. And because of that, our studio is sponsored by the Coral Laundromat. They are now open at 3620 Veterans Boulevard. And for those of you who are anticipating hunting season, they have unscented cleaners just for you. Maybe you didn't get things washed up from last season, and it's time to get that done. Whether you're bow hunters, you're anticipating youth season, and so much more, get out there and take care of those items. And Coral Laundromat, we'll be glad to help you do so. We want to hear the livestock market update from the American Ag Network. And when we return, we have our guest joining us today. I am looking forward to learning more about chia, just like the chia pets we all heard about in the 70s and 80s. Where'd that seed come from? We're going to visit with a farmer from South Dakota, as well as a processor over in Kentucky, Tennessee. Oh, Chris will tell me where he's at, and we'll find out more from them after this. Here on Weather and Ag in Focus, we often talk about such a big variety of crops. One that we focused on this year was spring wheat, as we raised 20 acres in a custom situation with our farm producers, Mike and Jim Newland, that was at north of Prosper, North Dakota, near Gardner. And we thank them for all of the work that they did in the field, and also to Peterson Farm Seed for being our seed supplier. Seed that we raised is going back into use next year to raise seed wheat that'll be planted and brought back out for maybe a cash crop or further seed production. We'll see how that goes. But we're going to talk about a different type of seed today. This ought to be fairly exciting. For those of you who were a kid the same time I was, you remember those commercials. Chia. Well, we're going to talk about chia seed. but I don't think it's going to Chia Pets anymore. We're joined by Chris Coomer, who is with Heartland Chia, and Vince Eberhardt. He farms near Pollock, South Dakota. So, Chris, I'm going to start with you. Chia seeds. How long have people been raising chia seeds in the U.S.? Kind of give us a little bit of an overview of that business, if you could.
Sure. We started in 2012, and some people tried to grow some wild types of chia seed before that with no success in the southern U.S. In the early, probably 2000s. Chia really caught on then. It went from being a fad to a food ingredient to a mainstream product, more than just a fad for health, a few health conscious people. And the world caught on to the value of chia in your diet. So that sometime in the early 2000s, it really took off like that. And like I said, we started growing in 2012 and have been growing it ever since.
Okay, that begs the question when you say growing it. So Vince, you're in North Central South Dakota. How long have you been growing chia seeds?
So we started growing chia for Heartland for Chris, and the first year we grew it, I think, was 2018. Is that right, Chris?
I have slept too many like times to remember. That sounds reasonable. Yes.
And so you know, they had only been doing it, you know, what, probably 4 years at that time, where they were in, you know, large scale production other than just some plots and stuff. And so, we started growing it then. It manifested from my wife was buying chia. Our kids liked chia pudding and she was putting it in smoothies. And I'm like, huh, that's an interesting crop. I wonder if we can grow that in the U.S. Where's it growing? I started doing some research and ended up talking with Chris, and that was kind of how we got started.
So, Chris, where's the ideal place to raise chia? Is it happening across the U.S. overall?
I guess some more of the backstory. The varieties we grow were developed at the University of Kentucky through a traditional breeding program. It's a non-GMO seed. And the wild types of chia that are grown in other places in the world, most of the world's chia supply comes from Central South America, where Argentina and Bolivia come together. There's an area there that there's about 500,000 acres a year grown. And that flowers extremely late in the year. And it flowers too late in the year to be able to make seed in the U.S. and in the Midwestern U.S. That's why they were trying to grow some of those varieties around the coast in the very southern U.S., but it just didn't work. Because chia is native to a dry, arid climate, and it doesn't like too much water, too much rainfall. So it grows really well, like where Vince is, in a more arid climate, other places in the U.S. We've had production. We've had trials in 16 states. We've had commercial production in 4 now. But it does like a dry, arid climate, and what we grow flowers much sooner in the year. That was developed by the University of Kentucky. They patented it. We licensed that patent. They wanted to see it developed for the benefit of farmers, food manufacturers, and ultimately consumers here in the U.S. And that's how we were able to get the license that, and we were involved with the development work initially on it when they first took it to the field. But our license says we have to develop it for the benefit of other farmers, and that's what we have done. We're farmers ourselves. And we planted the first in 2012. The university had about 10 pounds of seed. They gave us half of it. We didn't know how to grow it. They didn't know how to grow it much either. And we put it in a wet area in a really nice silt loam tiled bottom ground field that grows great corn and soybean. Well, it rained a bunch that spring and it almost killed it all. So we had half the world's seed supply of this brand new crop and nearly killed and pretty much killed it all. Oh. We had to get more seed the next year from the university. So we went from that to now we've, you know, we're doing semi loads in multiple states. So it's been a good journey. It's been a difficult journey at times. We learned to grow a crop in the U.S. that really wasn't supposed to grow here. We had to label herbicides. We had spent a lot of money on R&D and small block research trials trying to learn fertility, planting dates, seeding rates, row spacing. All those things matter, and they matter a lot. So we did that for quite a few years and really went to market with the first commercial production from Kentucky in 2015. And when we did that, we realized we had to do it if anyone else was going to do it. And we could go to someone like Vince or any other grower and say, hey, we think chia might be an opportunity for you because of where you're located and all the pieces of the puzzle seem to be in place. We knew we had to grow it with regular equipment. So this is a tiny seed. It's about 400,000 seeds per pound. It's about the size of alfalfa. So we had to learn a lot about how to make this work with the standard combine and standard seeding equipment for anybody else to be able to do it. And then we had to be able to go offer them a better value than, you know, per acre than what they're currently growing, or why would they want to grow it? So we've done a lot through the years. We've had a lot of help, and we've had a lot of great cooperation with Vince that we've learned a lot with.
And Chris or Vince, either one of you guys can answer this. What are some of the benefits of chia seeds?
I'll let Chris go on that one.
Vince is silence. I'll go ahead. No, chia seed, it's an oil seed. It's about 36, 38% oil. It's about the same composition as canola. It's about 42% fiber. Okay. And the rest is pretty much protein. It has 11 amino acids, which is extremely rare for a crop. They've only got a few, and that's why you mix, say, soybean and corn and other things in a feed ration to get a balanced diet for the animals you're feeding. You could pretty much live on chia seed and water alone. You wouldn't be really healthy, but there's very few crops, if any others, you could do that with. So the oil is 68% omega-3. That's what people are looking for. That's for our heart health and muscle health. And it's a lot of athletes eat chia seed. That's where it originally was a fad, more than anything, was with athletes. And now other mainstream America and mainstream around the world has realized the value of including small amounts of chia in your diet can make a big difference in your health. I had a good friend, an older gentleman that was on a blood thinner, and he, chia is a, I don't know that I can make the medical claim, and I don't, let me add that disclaimer, I'm not. There's lots of research that shows that, and it's from Johns Hopkins and Mayo and other places. It's not science somebody hired, it's legitimate medical research. But anyway, it's known to lower cholesterol, lower blood pressure. He had blood clots, and he was on blood thinner, and he started taking this, and his blood got too thin. His doctor told him to quit eating the chia and keep taking his medicine. I get that. The doctor can dose the medicine. But I think I would have rather gotten off the warfarin, which is rat poison, and just eating some chia every day. It seems healthier, but, you know, it is what it is. But that there's a lot of health benefits, and so that's why people eat chia. That's why you include a small amount, you know, in your diet, if you want to every day.
See, I think Bridget sprinkling that on a nice dish of ice cream, you know, that sounds good.
I actually have several chia recipes that are great, and I know a lot of folks that add them into yogurts and that type of thing. Huh. And just as Vince said, smoothies. Now, I have a ton of questions, but a lot of them are going to be focused agronomically with Vince about planting, harvesting, because these are tiny seeds. I can imagine they find every opening on a combine, and we're going to ask those questions when we return from bottom of the hour news. So stay tuned, because it's all about chia today. You know, you've had a hard year in the farm, and we need to protect everything, whether it's what we have for farm equipment by putting up a different shop, by what we have to do to protect our grain for storage. Maybe you're looking at doing one of those bridge loans through the Bank of North Dakota. And don't forget to protect your information. When you're doing those types of projects, someone is probably watching your email, ready to swipe banking information and take some dollars from you. Don't let that happen. Talk to Chris Sherman over at Support Farm. He's going to make sure that you are protected so that no one can have a chance to swipe information from you and take that away, what you've worked so hard to earn. Today we're talking all about chia, and I'm going to sing the jingle yet like three times during this interview because I'm enjoying this so much. And we are visiting with Vince Eberhardt. He farms in Pollock, South Dakota, raises chia, and Chris Coomer, who is with Heartland Chia, who is the buyer for it. So Vince, when it comes to getting ready to plant chia seeds, are you using a drill, an air seeder? I mean, these are tiny seeds. What are you doing to get ready to put this crop in the ground in the spring?
That's a great question. So we use an air seeder, which, and let me first preface all of this with everything I've learned from Chris, because they did it in Kentucky and continue to do it. I mean, he's got chia growing right now, you know, that they're going to harvest here this fall. But it is a very tiny seed. We use our air seeder. We use an extra fine roller, had to order that in. We didn't have that. You plant about 2.5-ish pounds an acre, which is going to get you, it's somewhere between, somewhere between a pound and 2 pounds. You know, you're getting 800,000 seeds out there. And I don't know, Chris, what we hope to get a stand of about 250. Is that a fair number?
Yes, that would be a good number. Yeah, you want it more dense than soybean, but yeah.
Okay.
And so you put a lot of seed out there hoping that you get a third of it to come up, maybe half-ish. And that's about what comes up. What we have found is we've been no-till for 35 years since the early 90s. It works the best on soybean ground, or a pulse crop ground would work fine too. But that chia seed just doesn't have enough energy to come up through no-till corn fodder. And so, and you need to plant it shallow. Half an inch is probably the best. If you could even scratch it in and get a little dirt on top of it at say a quarter or a third of an inch, that'd probably be good. But you get deeper than an inch, it's not going to come up.
Okay. So when you've got this growing and you're concerned about weed control, I heard Chris say that there are some herbicides that are registered for use. So between the two of you, Chris, are you using anything in the herbicide realm? If so, is it all in season? Or Chris, what are some of the other items that people could use? I'll let Vince go first.
So what I will, the easiest answer to that is that's why we like soybeans. We've got good clean fields out there that we're seeding into. We'll get a pre-emerge, we'll get out there. Not a pre-emerge, but we'll get out there and we'll burn everything down good in the spring. This is a later seeded crop, mid-May to Memorial Day. So you can get some activation on weeds and stuff in the spring. And then, you know, go burn that down, plant it in there. And chia, it takes off. It is very... It grows quickly and it grows big and it chokes out most everything. And we plant in 12 inch rows. And so, you know, I think Chris, they do a little bit different. They, I think, plant in 15 inch rows, but it bushes out, it branches out, and it's, like I said, it's aggressive in its growing and it just chokes everything out.
Oh my gosh, this sounds wild. So, Chris, do you find yourself having to do a lot of things in season as far as weed control, or as Vince mentioned, this is a very crop or a very competitive crop and doesn't really allow anything else to come through it?
Well, it is that, and we also try to do everything we can to give it a chance so that it doesn't have a lot of weed pressure. We here in Kentucky, we do a three-crop rotation in 2 years where we planted corn this past spring. We've harvested the corn. We will plant wheat. That will grow through the winter. We'll plant our wheat in a couple of weeks, and it grows through the winter. We harvest it next June. We plant soybean. So we use those fields because there's always something growing except that one fallow winter, and we may put a cover crop out then. But we try to do as much as we can to keep it in our cleanest fields to give it the best chance we can. And We grow it as sustainably as we can. We do everything. We are actually working with two sustainability certifications on our farm here. And so we target as little herbicide use as we need and target the fertility at the right time, the right place. And so, you know, really, if you have to think ahead and do a little bit of planning and give it the best chance you can, chia, when it's really small, is very delicate. And when it's nearing harvest, it's delicate again. The seed will fall off in really tough conditions, high winds, storms. The seed can, it'll shatter, the seed can fall out. But other than that, okay, while it's growing, it's a very tough crop. It's very competitive. Yeah.
So that shatter reminds me of canola. And so, Vince, when you're running a header, you're in an area that I'm very familiar with. You got some rocks out there. Are you trying to run a header on the ground in order to not have any shatter loss? Or do you want to run high and leave some stubble?
Well, now, we don't have Wishing rocks, but we have rocks. But
okay, fine.
You know, I mean, you guys might have, you know, some people have tree rows of trees. You know, you get into some parts of North Dakota, they have rock rows, you know. So short answer is no, you cut it high. And that was another reason we really like that. It's, chia is a low water usage crop. You cut it high enough that you leave stubble there that can catch snow, like any small grain would. And that was what was appealing to me, is it was, you know, corn and soybeans are a high water usage crop. You know, our grains are, small grains are low water usage, but, you know, they're also, the margins are tighter on those. And so, you know, we like the fact that you can harvest it high. So it's, you know, depending on, I mean, it may be, I don't know, 2 feet off the ground, a foot and a half, you know, like you're not sucking in any rocks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when you're, after Vince is harvested, and it's probably taken a few acres to, because the small seeds, a few acres to create a semi-load, do you just have to Linex the entire inside of a grain trailer to get it to Chris to process? Because this stuff will find any little spot and shake out, I'm sure. And Chris, once it gets to you, you know, what's the processing look like? Is there very much that has to happen before you have it packaged?
Go ahead, Vince. How do you haul it?
So we should even step back a little bit further, because chia, as Chris would say, his favorite phrase when it comes to chia in a grain tank is, it's like water. And it is. It will find any hole that water would go through, chia will go through. And a nice wide Gorilla Tape is your friend when you're harvesting. I don't care how new a combine you have. You do that, and you just, all you got to do is walk around when you're just sitting there. If you got it in the grain tank or whatever, and you can just see where it's falling out, you throw a piece of tape over it. You can do the same with your traps on your semis, you know, but, we actually have not had any trouble on the semis, but I guarantee you in the combines, it will find any little tiny, you know, rusted out hole or something, and it'll come out of there. So, and then we get it to a processor, and then Chris can probably talk about all that gets done to it, as far as it cleans out, obviously, the sticks and foreign material, and then it's, you know, it's sized and you know, takes out any larger seeds that may have been in with it and everything. Mm-hmm. So, and it's, okay, and Chris can tell you this.
Okay, my turn. All right. The, once it leaves, like Vince's farm, we take to a really good food grade facility where they clean it. Anything we sell has to be 99.9%+ purity. So you're talking about basically dust in it, because that's just the standard for the market. We take it from a cleaning facility, again, a food grade plant, to another place here in Kentucky where it undergoes a final testing and treatment. Everything we sell is tested for Salmonella, E. coli, Listeria, other microorganisms, mold, yeast. It's tested for nutritional quality, each lot is. And when it leaves our hands, it's basically like a bag of sugar or flour or any food ingredient that you would buy in a grocery store. And it has to meet the same standards, and we have to do that to guarantee the food safety. So it's not, it's a long way from growing, you know, a commercial crop that you take to an elevator and deliver it. There's a lot more to it. And the farmer's got to do, I don't know, the farmer has to do more, but they have to hit their marks. They have to do it correctly to make it all work right, because events brings us a load of poor quality chia. I can't fix that and I can't sell that. So he doesn't get paid and we lose the production. We don't get paid. And I don't want that. When we go to work with growers, we've got a playbook, a manual of how to produce chia in the U.S. Because it's a patented crop. I mean, we contract with growers, but you sign a non-disclosure agreement, you sign a material transfer agreement saying you're going to protect the intellectual property. And, you know, we go from there and we'll buy everything back that they produce. And, you know, we have to pay them a premium enough on those acres. We have to make the chia worth enough on those acres that they're interested in growing it rather than their, whatever their least valuable crop might be. And so, you know, in order to do that, we have to go to market again with an extremely high quality product. Over the last few years, there have been a number of recalls of chia, most of it coming out of South America because of food safety issues. If you look at some chia, there are warnings says this product may contain lead. I don't understand why that is or how that's possible, but I assure you our chia does not contain lead. So we market an extremely high quality product to U.S. consumers and food manufacturers and try to get a bit of a premium for it over what, you know, the cheapest imported chia sells for. That's for sure. We have to make it work and provide an opportunity for other people. Our sales over the last few years have gone up substantially every year, year over year. And so we're looking to expand production slowly and conservatively with people that, you know, we'll try a little bit one year. Let's see how it goes. And then maybe we can do more. And we want to do some production in different places in the U.S. and have some clusters of production around these food grade facilities that can do what we need. So that's what we've been trying to do over the last 4 or 5 years now.
And Chris, got a couple of questions here for you. I was reading online. It always starts with that. Is it true that chia seeds, and I'm asking for myself, can it actually promote hair growth?
No.
Okay.
I have not heard that. And I am mostly bald myself.
Okay.
So no, it helps a lot of things, but it's not growing hair.
Well, and you know,
I will not make that claim.
Okay.
I guess, Earl, I need to say, I didn't mean to make medical claims. I don't want someone to go quit taking their
sure
blood thinner and start eating chia. Please consult with your doctor before making any changes. You know, but it is good for a lot of health benefits.
And Chris, for anybody listening saying, hey, you know, this sounds like a good health alternative. When you're in the is this carried in most grocery stores? And is there anything special we should be looking for? Like there's different vitamins out there and you have to be careful of what's actually in them. Is there anything if we're going to the grocery store or a health food store to look for chia seeds, is there anything specifically we should be looking for?
Yeah, look for one that has a red, white, and blue bag and says Heartland Chia on the front.
There you go.
Okay. That'd be perfect. They'll take care of it. But no, as far as that goes, I mean, you know, whether you're buying ours or someone else's, you want to look for my recommendation would be if it's a covered bag, a solid bag that you can't see the product in or jar, don't buy it because that's usually an indication it's a crappy product and they're trying to hide it. You want to see what you're buying. There should be clear windows in the bag or the bottle should be clear plastic so you can see it. You know, unfortunately, where you live, you don't really have the option to buy ours. You can buy it online on our website. You can buy it on Amazon. Mm-hmm. But other than that, you can't. We're working right now with a nationwide grocery chain that I think they're just about to try. They're going to do a trial run with our product starting in a few months. So I'm really excited about that. That would be a nice opportunity for us and a lot of other growers that we could get the product and, you know, nationwide on grocery store shelves. That'd be the first time for that.
That would be awesome. Well, this is way more stuff than I knew was coming today. So again, I just get to keep singing Chia because it's been a great day to do it.
Well, guys, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. You know what? And you piqued my interest. I'm going to check this out over the weekend. I'm always looking for some good healthy alternatives. And I honestly myself didn't know chia seeds were that beneficial. So
they really are. And yeah. One of our other show hosts will tell you that she uses them too. They're a great filler. They're like they fill you up like a good protein. I've used chia for a number of years and really enjoy it. So this has been fun. I'm so glad that you guys are willing to talk about this crop and how unique it is, especially to find it so close to us right down there in Pollock, South Dakota.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks again, guys. And I'll tell you what, we've got some beautiful weather heading our way over the next 5-6 days. We'll recap the forecast. And if we have got time, Bridget will recap a couple of ag topics, all of that coming up in a few minutes. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus on this Friday. We've got temperatures outside in the mid to upper 70s across the area. A beautiful beautiful afternoon out there. Hopefully you can get out and enjoy it as we have breezy conditions out of the south. But, hey, I think we'll take a little wind when we've got temperatures in the 70s. And we're going to continue with the nice weather all the way through the weekend. It'll be a little breezy on Sunday, but tomorrow looks absolutely fantastic. I know we've got homecoming and we've got tailgating out there tomorrow and should be a decent day with temps overnight tonight into the mid to upper 40s and then rebounding into the low to mid 70s tomorrow. So a few degrees cooler tomorrow, but not by much. And then highs right around 80 on Sunday, breezy conditions out of the south. And then we're looking at near record warmth on Monday, mid to upper 80s. And then we stay in that 80 to 83 degree range all the way through the middle of next week to start off October. Bridget, it doesn't get much better than that.
Well, happy NDSU homecoming. See y'all at the game.
Absolutely. Go Bison. And don't go anywhere. The Jay Thomas Show, the best of the Jay Thomas Show, that's coming up next.